Hey everybody, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Got a new mic this week, so hopefully the sound quality is a little bit better. I gotta say, I don't know if I'll ever quite get the sound quality of my podcast up to that of the BBC or some of these other professional news organizations. I gotta say, I got a little bit of a chuckle when I was getting compared to podcasts like that, but definitely want to make sure that I'm trying to do everything I can to, you know, make sure the sound quality is as good as possible, so you guys can enjoy the info on the podcast and not be worried about the sound quality and stuff like that. So hopefully this will do the trick. But I got a few things on top for you guys this week. First up in our equipment review, the gear review, I'm going to talk about wide handlebars. And this is something that's been slowly making its way onto the market and seeing wider and wider handlebars, and kind of what are some of the advantages, and, you know, are there advantages, and what's kind of the point of diminishing returns and stuff like that. The next thing I'm going to do is go over supplement review and talk about whey protein, just kind of, you know, what is it, what are the different kinds, you know, what should you look for when you're buying whey protein, how do you use it, because, you know, see, I find there's a lot of confusion even with something as basic as whey protein as far as exactly what is it and what are you supposed to do with it. And then the training tip this week is going to be about knowing your weakness in the gym and really what are you trying to work on, you know, and this specifically refers to mobility versus stability, you know, or do you have good range of motion but you're weak and don't have good command of it, or are you tight, and, you know, how should your mindset in the gym differ based on those things there. So that's what we're going to talk about this week. Hopefully you guys enjoy this podcast, and I guess we'll get started on our gear review. Hey guys, in this week's gear review, I'm going to talk about wide handlebars. And, you know, as far as like the sweep and rise and stuff like that, a lot of that comes down to personal preference. But what I'm particularly talking about are handlebars that are, you know, at least 27 inches wider, you know, preferably even wider than that. And I remember when I first started mountain biking, handlebars were narrow and flat, and that's pretty much what you got on your good cross country bike. And so just pretty much learned how to ride with that, and then eventually started getting a little bit more into the riser bars and getting a little bit wider bars. But I mean, I still remember when 25 inch wide bars were really wide and definitely not the norm. And today, you know, there's definitely a lot more of the wider handlebars. You know, you'll find like your average trail bike's going to come with like 25 inch wide bars. And so, you know, what I'm talking about, like I said, are bars that are even wider than that. And, you know, at first I wasn't too sure about this trend. You know, I tend to be a little resistant to things that just get wildly popular and real quick and for no real reason other than the fact that the pros are doing it. And it just seemed like a lot of the pro downhill riders, especially those that came from a motocross background, were running these really wide handlebars. And, you know, some of them were, you know, 30, 31 inches wide, which was, you know, way wider than anything that you would find on your average mountain bike. And like I said, I was a little bit wary of that at first. I thought it was just a bunch of people jumping on the Me Too bandwagon, and kind of resisted there for a while. I thought that my 27-inch wide bars were going to be plenty. But finally broke down and decided to try a pair out when I got my new downhill bike and got one of the Cro-Mag, you know, extra long bars, actually, the 31 inch wide bars, and found that I really liked it. And the main thing that I found, especially with my 27 inch wide bars, is that I tended to get my hands all the way out on the end of my handlebars. In fact, I run the ODI lock on grips, and so I would always like rub the metal raw, like rub the black finish off of the outside clamp ring, because my pinky was always out on that outer edge of the bar. And so I figured, well, at the very least, I don't necessarily have to hold my hands any wider. I'll be able to hold them as wide as I was. I just won't have my pinky hanging off the edge of the bar. But what I found was I actually was a little more comfortable running my hands out a little bit wider. And you know, just like I had thought, I'm not running my pinky out on the edge of the bars. And so it's a little more comfortable on my grip. And What I've found is that I definitely have a lot more upper body stability and control with my hands a little bit wider. In fact, after riding the 30-inch bars for a while, I finally got the 31-inch bars for my downhill bike, and after running that for a while, I decided I want to try some on my trail bike, on my Yeti 7. So I got a pair of the Cro-Mag again in the 30-inch wide. And been running those on the trail and really like it. I thought the 31s were just a little bit wide. And one of the things I'll talk about here in a second, as far as the potential negatives is, on the trail, we're still having to get through narrow trail sections. And for a lot of people, these trails and the sections they got to get through were made when handlebars were significantly narrower. And so something you kind of got to keep in mind with your local trails. But like I said, I went with the 30-inch wide for just my trail bike. And after going back to the 27s just for a short bit on another bike, it's kind of beyond the scope of this story, I felt almost handcuffed with those 27-inch wide bars, which was really funny because just a few months before, that's what I ran, and I thought that I felt really comfortable on them. And so it's kind of one of those things that you don't know what you're missing until you try it. And so, the wider bars do a couple of legitimate things for you. And in letting you get your hands out a little bit wider, the wider your hands are, it's kind of like when you're, if your legs, if your feet are really narrow and someone tries to push you over versus being able to spread your feet further apart and then trying to push you over. Getting your legs further apart widens your base. And same thing happens with your upper body. If you can get your hands a little bit wider apart, it's going to widen your base, which is going to create more stability. So it can create some extra body stability. It does help with leveraging the bars, the wider bars. Helps with leveraging the bars when you're turning your bike and trying to push that inside arm forward and lean the bike over and not lean your body. And also, I've really found that it helps with standing climbing. I guess wider bars on single speeds has been something that's been relatively common because of the extra leverage that it gives you with the climbing. But again, you don't have to have a single speed to make you stand up and climb hard, which is basically what single speeds kind of force people to do and get out that sit and spin thing. So you can use the wider handlebars to help you out on your geared bike as well. But but I do believe that there is a point of diminishing returns. And I see people out there, especially smaller riders with narrower shoulders, running these ridiculously wide handlebars, and you can see that their hands are just out really super far. And there is, like I said, there is a point of diminishing returns. And you can think about it this way. You can even just try it with push-ups. If you try with your push-ups with your hands in narrow, it's hard. It's harder to do than if you have your hands set at like a comfortable, just outside a shoulder width apart hand position. And also, if you get your hands out really wide out of that, it's almost too wide. And again, it gets hard. So, you can demonstrate to this to yourself just using push-ups on the floor that, getting your hands out too wide will actually start to decrease your leverage and decrease your power. So for that reason, I think that smaller riders, those that are under like, 5'8", 5'6", or tend to have narrower shoulders, may not benefit as much from the 30-inch bars. But, the 27-inch bars would be a good place for them, because I still see a lot of riders out there on even narrower bars than that. So that's just kind of some of my thoughts on the wider bars. Like I said, I think that it does have a good place. If you haven't tried them out yet, maybe give them a shot, because like I said, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised with the increase in the upper body stability and your ability to kind of turn, use proper cornering technique and stuff like that. So, just one of those things that I like. Just wanted to give you guys my feedback on it and kind of some of my experiences with it. And like I said, you do have to be a little more cognizant of clipping your handlebars on things on the trail. So, if you do live in an area that has a lot of trees and a lot of narrow passages through trees, then obviously this may not be the best option for you. But there aren't a whole lot of trails like that, not a whole lot of areas in the country that really require a ton of that on every ride. So, it could be something you can just learn to maneuver your way through. So, but anyway, so hope you guys enjoyed this gear review, and I will talk to you guys in the next podcast gear review. Hey everybody, welcome to this podcast supplement review. And this podcast, I'm going to go over whey protein, just kind of whey protein in general, not necessarily any specific brand or anything like that, but just kind of go over, what is whey protein, what should you look for when you're, buying it at the store, and how do you use it? How do you get the most out of it? So, first and foremost, what is whey protein? And whey protein is literally a component of the manufacturing of cheese. And it is a part of milk. It is not a milk protein. So it's not the same. Like casein is milk protein, and whey is a component of milk. And like I said, for a long time, it was considered almost a byproduct. And I mean, in fact, you got the old children's rhyme with Little Miss Muffet sat on a tuffet eating her curds and whey. So, whey's actually been around for quite a while. But it wasn't until a few decades ago where they figured out how to basically clean it up and purify it and get it out of the form that kind of forms naturally when they're making dairy products, like I said, like cheese and stuff like that, and turn it into a high quality protein source. And what they found was that the protein that they were able to get, that's now become commonly known as whey protein, is extremely bioavailable by the body. And what that means is that your body can use more of it ounce per ounce than just about anything else. Some proteins, for example, like plant proteins like soy, aren't very bioavailable to the body. The body cannot very efficiently break it down and make use of it. So when you eat a gram of soy protein, you aren't getting a gram's worth of protein nutrition, I guess, for lack of a better term. Technically what you're doing is increasing nitrogen and giving amino acids and stuff to your body, but you don't get as much gram per gram with a lower quality protein like soy as you do with something like whey. And like I said, whey has become kind of the gold standard because it's been found to be one of the most bioavailable proteins, meaning that gram per gram you get more return for consuming whey protein than just about any other protein. And so now this doesn't mean that whey protein is the only kind of protein that you want to have. There are a couple drawbacks to it. One, it's very fast acting, and so after you eat it, your body absorbs it really quickly. The problem is your body can only do so much with so much protein at a time. And people throw these numbers out there like you can only absorb 25 to 50 grams of protein per feeding. And all of those numbers are completely made up. They're experts trying to sound smart and just started throwing numbers out there, and people picked them up and started repeating them enough to become fact. Because if you look and you try to find where these numbers come from, you can't find it. So no one really knows exactly how much protein you can consume at one time, and how much protein your body can utilize at one time. But it's just safe to assume that you want to try to get a variety of proteins in your diet. So just eating whey protein is not the answer. You want to have whey protein, you want to have milk protein, you want to have your beef and your chicken and your animal proteins and things like that. But like I said, the whey protein is definitely a very high quality protein that your body can make very good use of. And so that's basically where it comes from. I mean it's literally kind of a byproduct from the making of certain dairy products that's then filtered and uses all sorts of different like ion exchange and things like that, these different fancy sounding terms. And that's kind of the next step, is what do you look for when you're buying a whey protein? Because there are different kinds of whey proteins, and it really depends on how was it manufactured. How did they take the bulk whey and then process it down to the powdered stuff that you then put in your protein shake? And so the highest quality protein is whey protein isolate. And so that's definitely the highest quality whey protein out there. It's also, one of the more expensive proteins out there. And so that's kind of what you're going to find is the trade-off is the higher the quality, the manufacturing process and the technique used to create the protein, well, then the more expensive the protein tends to get. And so that's why what you're going to find in a lot of products is whey protein concentrate. And whey protein concentrate isn't necessarily bad. You know, I mean, it's better than a lower quality protein like soy protein or something like that. But the truth is that you're looking at, 75, percent or less of that protein actually being protein. And so, literally 25% or more of what you're purchasing is not amino acids and nitrogen and the things that you're looking for protein to add to your system. And so these are the things that you're weighing when trying to decide, what do I want to buy? What do I want to invest my money in? And so personally, I buy the whey protein isolate, and I also buy a whey protein concentrate. And I tend to use both. If I'll at least use the whey protein isolate, once or twice a day, or if I'm having like a day when I'm eating a few more protein shakes than usual or something like that, then I'll have some of the concentrate. And so I find that that tends to help me balance the budget versus quality equation. But just know that whey protein concentrate is the lower quality whey protein, and up to 25% or more of what you're buying is not actually protein. And so, that also helps when you're buying, bars and different shakes and stuff like that. Turn them over and look at the label and see, what is in them, what kind of protein is in them. And what you're going to find actually is that a lot of the protein bars and things like that use very, very, very low quality protein. You're going to see a lot of whey protein concentrate, and you're going to see a lot of soy protein, both of which are low quality proteins, very cheap proteins. And so that's why they use them in those bars and stuff like that. So just kind of becoming aware of what you're looking at and what you're trying to find. So again, when you're looking to buy your whey protein, look more for the whey protein isolate, and just be aware that the whey protein concentrate's not quite as effective, or whatever, whatever words you want to use, but it's not the same. So how do you use it? What do you do with whey protein? Now, this is the biggest confusion that I see is people confuse whey protein with a post-workout drink, and they think that they just want to have a scoop of whey protein when they're done with their workout. And whey protein can be part of a post-workout drink, but they are not the same thing. And so a post-workout drink is carbs plus protein. Whey protein is simply protein. There are, practically no carbs in it. If you look at the label, you may see a couple carbs, but that usually comes from the flavoring or whatever they're using to sweeten it or something like that. So it's not a significant source of carbs. So what you're looking for is actually like twice as many carbs as you have grams of protein in a good post-workout drink. So like I said, you can use whey protein to make one. For example, if you take a cup of orange juice and mix in a half a scoop of vanilla whey protein, then that will give you a good ratio of carbs to protein, and that's a good homemade post-workout drink. So you can use it to make it, but they're not the same. So that's kind of the first thing that I want to address right there, is it's not just enough to have a scoop of whey protein after working out. That's not how you quote unquote use whey protein. Now, the best way to use whey protein is to use it to fill in protein gaps. And the first way that I do that is through eating a protein shake or fruit smoothie, really, with protein in it. And so, basically what I get is a cup of kefir, some bananas, a handful of frozen fruit, a scoop of whey protein, and then finish off with some milk or some orange juice. And then actually I'll throw in a tablespoon of lemon flavored fish oil as well, and mix that up. And I have at least one of those a day. And with that, I'll put my protein in. So that takes what would be a very carb heavy meal, with all of the fruits and fruit juice and stuff in it, and gives it the protein and kind of balances it out and makes it a better overall meal choice. And so that's the number one way to use it. Another way to use it is to kind of balance out carb heavy meals. So, again, The trick is kind of understanding how do I, you know, minimize my bad decisions when it comes to nutrition. And so, because we're always, you know, we're always going to be stuck with real world decisions and stuff like that. So, say you're trying to get out the door real quick in the morning and you're faced with, okay, I can either, you know, cook my breakfast like I usually do, or I can have a bowl of cereal. Well, it's better to have a bowl of cereal than have nothing. If you don't have time to cook your breakfast, but even better would be to sprinkle a scoop of whey protein on that bowl of cereal. So again, you've taken what would be a very carb-heavy meal with very little to no protein, and you've used the whey protein to quote unquote balance it out. And so, you know, you can do this with sandwiches, with a small bowl of pasta. Again, for me, this is just a really quick and easy way to minimize a bad food choice. So instead of just having a meal that is really carb heavy with little to no protein, you can use the whey protein to add some carbs in and kind of balance that out. And so that's kind of the second way that I use it. And then, you know, you can also use it in cooking. I mean, my wife uses it to make protein pancakes and different stuff like that. So John Berardi at precisionnutrition.com has a great cookbook that incorporates whey protein and stuff like that into different recipes. And so that would be a good resource. But so those are the three main ways, you know, my protein shake, using it to kind of balance out some carb heavy meals, and then also using it in cooking, you know, to make some different healthy meals and stuff like that. So those are some different ways to use whey protein. So, but that's basically it. I do think that protein is one of those, you know, must have supplements, and you know, even if you don't use it every day, I think that having it around so that you can use it when you need it, you know, those are kind of the things that help over the long run. You know, if you can, like I said, minimize your bad decisions, have things around like that so that when you are having a run out the door, it's real easy to mix together a quick fruit smoothie with some protein in it rather than just grab a candy bar or something on the way. So those are kind of the keys to good long-term nutrition and making sure that you're making good decisions on a regular basis. So that's how you kind of use whey protein, what you want to look for and how to use it and get the most out of that. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this supplement tip, and I'll talk to you in the next podcast supplement tip. Hey guys, in this week's training tip, I wanted to talk about knowing your weakness and how that should affect your mindset in the gym. And this is something that I was thinking about this morning when working with one of the riders that I started working with a few months back. And this guy actually came to me with the opposite problem of just about every other mountain biker that I've ever had come to me, in that he is extremely mobile but not very stable, which is kind of a nice way of saying that he's kind of weak. And he doesn't have the core strength and just kind of the overall strength to really effectively use that mobility and stuff that he has. And so in watching him train this morning, I was just noticing, like with one of the exercises that he was doing, I was having him do a single leg Romanian deadlift, and he was able to get a good range of motion on the exercise, but he just looked soft, you know, just not strong and in total command of the movement. And I was thinking about how that's kind of the opposite of the average rider that I have come in, who tends to be, you know, somewhat strong but really stiff. And so, you know, I spend most of my time watching most riders kind of doing the opposite, where they are looking very, very stiff and mechanical and operating in a very small range of motion. And so what I realized is that I've got, you know, basically two kinds of riders on opposite ends of the spectrum, and they kind of need to approach their training from a different mindset. And so, you know, for example, if you can't touch your toes, then odds are you're probably pretty stiff. So your main focus in the gym needs to be on increasing that mobility. You know, in fact, I would say that you would do better with your exercises in decreasing the weight and making them easier, and really working on trying to push into that end range of motion that you have control of, and really work on trying to increase your usable range of motion, even if it's with less weight, rather than continue to just move in the range of motion that you have, because it's not that you're not stable in that range of motion, it's that you don't have enough of that range of motion. Versus the rider at the opposite end of the spectrum, which isn't as common, but like I said, just kind of brought to my attention this morning that this is something that happens and that people need to be aware of, in that he had great range of motion, but he just didn't have the command of it. In fact, I told him to do the opposite, that I would actually like to see him use less range of motion, but show more strength and command in that range of motion, and you know, get used to staying tight and strong. And what was happening was he was very good at going through that range of motion, but he was doing it with almost a relaxed core, and he wasn't very stable in that position. And so, you know, while he was doing the exercise, and so for him, he needed to take the opposite approach, where look to shorten the range of motion up, but, you know, get stronger in it. In fact, maybe, you know, add some weight and really force your body to produce more tension and get stronger with the movements. And so just kind of understanding where you're at on that spectrum, you know, where is your weakness? You know, do you have good mobility, but you're just weak? You know, if that's the case, then you need to work on getting stronger in that range of motion, you know, maybe decreasing your range of motion on some exercises, and just working on being as stable as you can through that. And if you're on the opposite end and you're extremely tight, but you tend to be relatively strong, then you need to you know, back off the weight and work on increasing the range of motion and really working on mobility on a daily basis. You know, just kind of on a side note, because I think that the overmobile rider is a rarity. I don't think that as many of them exist as the overly stiff rider. And so, you know, to be honest with you, the rider who's overly mobile almost has an easier road than the rider who's too stiff, because it's a lot easier to get someone strong than it is to get them mobile and gain mobility. And there's a couple reasons for that. You know, one is the mentality that most people go into mobility work with, and that they don't really look at it in the same light and on the same level as their training, you know, when they're straining and working hard. You know, we're just kind of bred to believe that if we're not straining and trying, then it's not really work and it doesn't really count. So all this mobility, touchy-feely stuff that you know, James is always talking about is good, but, you know, it's just getting us ready to get in the gym and pound some iron and get things going. And so, you know, that's the number one thing. And in my mind, I view mobility on the same plane. I look at my mobility work as being just as important as my deadlifts and my push-ups and my intervals and stuff like that. And so, you know, that's the first thing that really helps. And the second thing is, the second reason that big increases in mobility can be tough is that it really takes a long-term commitment to doing it on a consistent basis. And in fact, I was just talking with somebody about this yesterday, that I would rather see someone spend 15 minutes a day, 4 days a week stretching, than going to one yoga class for an hour, hour and a half. And the reason for that is because by the time that you get back to that yoga class, it's been so long that any lengthening, anything that you got from all that stretching is gone. And so you have to be very consistent with it on an almost daily basis. And the reality is most of us just do not have the mindset and the discipline to do that over the long run and really reap the rewards. But I'll tell you, I'm going off on a bit of a tangent here, but I really saw some of the biggest gains of my life and my training when I really committed to the mobility side of things and really committed to the foam rolling, to the stretching, to the dynamic mobility work, and really working on increasing my range of motion and being just as mad at the fact that I couldn't do a decent squat to stand as I was at the fact that I wasn't doing a double bodyweight deadlift. You know, like that's literally how you have to look at it, that your mobility deficit should be just as big a source of frustration as your strength and cardio deficit should. And like I said, once I really committed to that, I found that everything in the gym started to come easier. And, you know, I was able to get stronger with less effort, which is really what, you know, I think that it's all about. And so, you know, getting that mobility side and really attacking it and spending the time that you need to on it. And, you know, even when you're doing your strength training, you know, understanding, you know, am I just moving through a shortened range of motion because of my bad mobility? You know, well, if that's the case, then I need to be doing what I can to get through that full range of motion, whether it's, you know, regressing the movement a little bit, like if you're doing squats or something like that, like using a TRX or something to give yourself a little bit of an assist so that you can get down deeper with better body position and really start repatterning some of those ways that you move and you know that will really help with your long-term gains. And so again, just kind of in conclusion, like I said, I kind of know I went off on a bit of a tangent there, but like I said, I think most people listening to this will benefit from knowing that, you know, if you're tight, that's where your focus needs to be, that you have to have the right mindset. And, you know, if you're on that opposite end of the spectrum, then you need to work on commanding and really being strong through your full range of motion. So, you know where you're at. You know, do you have are you mobile enough and you need more strength, or are you, you know, strong enough relative to your mobility? And I think that's where people get confused because they're like, "Well, I'm not strong." Well, you are compared to where your mobility levels are at. You know, I don't care where your mobility levels are at. If you can't touch your toes, you're too strong. You need to get more mobile. And you know, in the process, that'll increase your strength. But you know, just understanding what you're looking for and how that should affect your mindset in the gym, you know, when you go in there will really help, because not everybody needs the same stuff and not everybody needs to approach training the same way. So understand what your strengths are, understand what your weaknesses are, understand what you're trying to accomplish, and you'll get more out of your gym time. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this training tip, and I will talk to you in my next one. Well, guys, that does it for another edition of the MTB Strength Coach Podcast. Hope you guys have enjoyed this one. Like I said, hope the sound quality was a little bit better. Doing a few tests with the mic, it definitely sounded a little bit better. So hopefully that comes across here. And if not, you know, definitely let me know. I always appreciate your constructive criticism on stuff like that. Emphasis on the word constructive. You know, you suck is not constructive. So it's always cracks me up how many people are happy to sit there, have never done any of this stuff themselves, but are always so eager to point out how you could do it better. But I do appreciate it. So I just want you guys to know I am trying to put together the best quality package that I can and really make this podcast something that mountain bikers everywhere can enjoy and benefit from and look forward to. And so that's about it for this week. Hopefully you guys are having a good end of the season here in Grand Junction. We're hitting fall. The riding weather is definitely here, getting in the 70s and 80s, and you know, just getting out and riding as much as I can. In fact, yesterday spent all day up at Keystone, the last chance I'm going to get to go up there before the season's over. And just got to hand it to the guys at Keystone. Definitely still got, in my opinion, the best mountain in Colorado. Those guys over there at Trestle Bike Park at Winter Park are working hard and closing some ground. But, you know, I still think for, you know, steep, gnarly, technical, pucker-up moments, man, nothing quite beats a good run at Keystone. And, you know, definitely like some of their jumps and stuff, just a little. You know, if any of you guys over there at Trestle are listening, a little more lip on some of those jumps would be not too bad. They're a little flat for the speed that you got coming off of them there on the Rainmaker Trail. But anyway, so you know, for all you people out there that have never been to either bike park, none of that makes any sense or matters. But just kind of rambling on there, but you know, the point is riding season's coming to an end, and like I said, hopefully you guys have enjoyed your riding season. I know I definitely had a good one. You know, I always find this kind of an interesting time of year myself, where I kind of start reflecting back on, you know, what did I accomplish this year? You know, what did I advance as a rider? You know, did I advance like I thought that I would? You know, what do I want to start working on this off season to try to get better at next season and things like that. Like, now's kind of the time to take stock in where you're coming from and where you want to go, and start thinking about how you're going to get there. Because you know, that's why God made off seasons, so that you can have a chance to sit back and work on bridging some of the gaps between where you're at and where you want to be, and you know, come out of the gate strong next off season. So anyways, that's what this podcast and everything's all about, is trying to help you guys do just that. But and lastly, as always, you know, if you guys get a chance, if you like this podcast, you know, take a moment, go over to iTunes and, you know, give it a rating or write a little review or something like that. It helps with the podcast rankings and all that good deal of stuff. But so hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. Once again, it's been James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com. And I will talk to you guys in the next one.